Hi, this is Rory O'Connor, creator of Rory Story Cubes and co-creator of the Extraordinaries Design Studio with Anita Murphy, and you're listening to Family Gamers.
Hello everybody, and welcome to episode 78 of the Family Gamers Podcast.
I apparently in 2018 am unable to start a podcast,
but I am, so I can fill in for you.
Yeah, we are your hosts. My name is Andrew, and I am here as always with my lovely wife Anitra.
That's me.
And our first order of business is to say
Happy New Year,
everybody! It is January 1st, 2018.
At least it is when we're recording this.
Right. We took a week off because of Christmas, and we are late with this show because of New Year's.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Hope you had fun with your families.
But we did a lot in the last week.
Oh, boy.
We played many, many games with many, many people, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
So, as always, I think that before we get into the subject of our show, which is our favorite games of 2017, we will talk about those games that we've been playing,
that huge list of games that we've been playing. Yeah, as a caveat, we were so busy leading up to Christmas, we didn't play many games before Christmas. But man, during Christmas vacation, we crammed in a ton.
Yeah, we made up for it.
a ton.
A lot.
Yeah.
So where would you like to start, dear?
Boy, I don't know. Let's start with some of the lighter games.
Sure.
We played Flip City.
From Tasty Minstrel.
Which we've mentioned a few times in the past. Should have a review coming up on the site in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, that is a an interesting game that, for some reason, you know, it reminds me of any of those arts where if you don't use it, you lose it kind of thing. And
yeah,
the mechanics are just unique enough that if I come back to it after not having played it for a month, I have to kind of really remind myself of what's going on.
Well, it's a deck builder, but it's a deck builder with very odd mechanics. Not
unique
bad,
mechanics.
Just odd.
Yeah. So we played some Flip City.
Yep.
Next game on the list, also by Tasty Minstrel Games.
Yes.
And that is Okie Dokie.
Yeah, we finally opened up our copy and tried it out. This is an adorable cooperative puzzle game.
Mm-hmm. So they were giving this game out at PAX Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun. It's this game where you're working together with your team to create a 10x10 grid.
Yeah, so it's really an abstract game, but they disguise it as the animals are getting together and creating an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating a 5x10 grid. There are 5 suits of animals, and each suit, the numbers go from 1 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
However, you also have zeros. For each row of your 5x5 grid ends up being one of the 5 suits.
Right.
And each row will end up having 2 zeros in it. Zeros are resets, which are handy because your numbers need to go more or less in order.
In numerical order. Right. And so
from lower to higher.
The odds of actually getting them in sequential numerical order is extremely low.
Especially if you're looking at all 5 rows.
Yeah. / impossible. And so you have to skip some numbers, but then you can put those resets in to start at the beginning.
To start
again,
back at zero.
Where the beginning is whatever the next number is that you play.
Yeah,
so
whatever the lowest number is you can play.
But it was fun. I think that kind of the default difficulty setting or whatever you'd call it with all of the zeros, we were able to get through it on the first try.
On the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, by the skin of our teeth, right. So that was a really good game. I really liked it quite a bit.
It reminded me just a little bit of Hanabi, that you're cooperating, but you can't give, you're not allowed to give full information.
About what you have in your hand. Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
We also played a game with a bunch of people that we've talked about before on the show called Crosstalk from Nauvoo Games. This is a kind of a taboo/charades kind of blend with some unique mechanics.
Yep.
Basically there's 2 teams, and the clue giver for each team, they have the answer at the same time and they're alternating giving clues. But when team A gives a clue, team B gets to guess before team A gets to guess. And so
You're trying to come up with ways really to give clues stuff that'll be more useful for your team than for the other team.
Right. We will have a review out for this one, too. I think the big thing about this is, even though, like, mechanically, it seems like it's perfectly approachable for kids, and it is, mechanically,
yeah,
it's a much more cerebral game.
Well, and it requires a lot of domain knowledge.
Well, I think that's true with any game.
I mean,
with any
a lot like that. A lot like a Pictionary or something like that, that it's just hard to do in a mixed group.
Right. So we did struggle with that when trying to get the kids involved, but yeah. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Was Crosstalk from Naboo Games.
Let's see. Some of the other lighter games we played. We brought out Magic Maze for some of our usual gaming buddies who hadn't gotten to play it yet. That
yeah.
was so much fun, and we lost so many times.
Yeah, it was actually really funny. I mean, this was actually kind of our classic normal gaming group, and for some reason, it just... some of the members of our group hadn't been able to come for a while, and then they finally came, and we were like, oh, wait, we have this game that you need to play, and I don't know what it was. It was just...
We could not get our act together.
Couldn't get it together, yeah.
We kept running out of time.
Let's see. So we had some new friends over for games.
We did.
So we got to introduce a few of our now old favorites. Onitama,
mm-hmm.
the two-player kind of abstract strategy game that is a lot like chess that I love from Arcane Wonders.
It's so wonderfully approachable to sit down and play. I love it.
And he is also an engineer, so we played a bunch of like brain-bending
games like Stroop.
Games like Stroop. Which is based on the Stroop effect from Grand Gamers Guild. And that is a very fun game that I always... Like, I'm always playing that game, and I'm terrified that I'm doing it wrong while I'm playing it because
yeah.
of the Stroop effect,
yeah.
which is pretty funny. And then he brought out a game that he had created, which was
yes.
really, really neat. Do you want to attempt to describe the game?
We can try. It's hard without seeing it, although it's a very simple concept. The idea is that there are six colored dice...
Six-sided colored
yep,
dice.
Just regular dice. You roll them and then place them in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have two other dice, one that has the six colors on it and one that has a number. I think the one we had, the die we were using, the numbers went from like 3 to 7.
Something like that.
You roll those two dice. The color tells you where on the circle you are going to start your travels. And the number tells you how many times you're going to change direction.
Right.
So say you rolled green and then 3. You start at the green die, you look at how many pips are showing on the green die, and go and mentally go that far around the circle. I believe
clockwise.
You start clockwise. Whatever number you stop on, then you look at whatever die you stop on, then you look at the number there and go that number of pips counterclockwise.
And you go back and forth.
And you go back and forth until you reach the number rolled on the number die. At
if you ever land on a die that you've been on before, then you add one to the pip count to go back in the other direction.
Yeah. So the key with all this is you're actually trying to figure it all out in your head and be the fastest one to figure it out what the ending landing die is. Mm-hmm. And then you play a card to set, basically say, I know what it is. And there are points for first, second, third, fourth, whatever place, as long as you get the answer right.
Mm-hmm.
If you get it wrong, you lose points.
And so there were a couple times when I would put a card down and be like, no! And then I'd have to put a second card down. So I'd still get some points,
yeah.
but I'd also lose points.
Yeah. So. And I will say that Claire, our 9-year-old daughter, beat me at this game, even though she complained it was really hard. And I'm like, yep, it's really hard. And yet somehow you're better at it than me. Good job.
Well, you technically beat her by 1 point.
At the very end of the game, I managed
you
to
snuck,
pull
you
ahead,
snuck ahead
slightly.
Right.
I spent half the game in the negative. So, yeah.
So, let's see. We also played Ill-Tempered Tikis.
Yeah.
This is a game from Wild East Games
yep.
that is, I guess, finishing Kickstarter fulfillment now.
I think so.
And that is... sort of one of these set collection.
It's a set collection game, yeah. But you can play well-mannered or you can play ill-mannered.
Right.
Or ill-tempered, I suppose. So there's a few certain rules on how you can play the things in the set in front of you. If you play the ill-tempered variation, all of the wild cards get put in their own draw pile, and nobody starts with any wild cards. The only time you can take a wild card is if you can speedily match one of the guys in your hand to a card that's just been discarded, and then you get to pick up a wild card instead, which is part of what makes it ill-tempered, but also pretty fun in a gotcha kind of way.
Yep.
Let's hit a few more of the light games before we start talking about the heavier ones.
Mm-hmm.
We played some more OK Play with my mother and children. Because
I don't think I was in on that one.
No, she showed us. She showed us her old copy of a three-dimensional checkers game that's a 4x4x4 grid.
Okay.
And after she showed the kids that, they said, oh, Nana, you got to play this one. And we pulled out OK Play. It was one of the most cutthroat OK Play games that I have played, and it was fun. It was fun. At the very end, she won because it came down to someone could block me or someone could block her.
Boo!
They knew if they blocked me that I would block her instead, but it didn't quite work out that way. So it was good. We tried out PDQ.
We did. So this is a game from Game Right Games. We have a couple of sort of the kind of quick filler card-based games from Game Right to review. PDQ is one, and Think in Sync is the other one.
Yep.
PDQ is a game that's a lot like a game we've talked about. Well, actually, we haven't really talked about it for a while because we haven't had a chance to play, but a game called Duple,
which is one of our favorites. It's a speed word building game.
Yeah. So the way PDQ works, incredibly simple.
Yes.
There's a dealer who deals three cards. They deal the middle one first, and then the left and right don't really matter. And then the first person to come up with a word that is at least four letters long without being plural, it can be a plural word, but yes. That either starts with the leftmost or the rightmost letter and contains all of the letters in the order that they are presented, not necessarily sequentially,
yep.
wins those three cards. Cards. Hard letters like J, K, Z, Q are worth double. And if everybody agrees that you can't come up with a word from the three letters that go down, they get moved to the side and you do the next one.
Yeah, and then whoever wins that
gets to take them all. So
it's very simple. In a small group, it can be fun to kind of go back and forth. In a larger group, it can quickly get frustrating because one or two people will keep getting...
Yeah, they'll just get in the zone.
We'll keep getting the words over and over.
And the dealer definitely has a disadvantage in this game.
Definitely.
There's no question about that.
But it was fun. It scratches a lot of the same itch as Duple, which we've talked about before, but in a way where you're not trying to look all over the table and keep track of a bunch of different stuff.
Focus in one place.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't even know if I like it so much as a filler necessarily as the palate cleanser. Like, it's a nice thing to clear the gook out of my brain.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was PDQ. So that was not too bad.
We've been playing more Blank.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big hit in our house, and we've started bringing it to any kind of gathering of people we go to.
Yeah,
letting more people create cards, which is fun. It changes.
It definitely adds variety, which is really, really neat.
Yeah.
We did have our inaugural session of Untold Adventures Await.
We did. So this is not a light game.
Well,
man, is it fun!
I mean, it's not a mechanically
deep
game. It's an involved
game,
but it's not.
But it's. I mean,
it's pretty light. I mean, kids can play it.
Yes. On the other hand, our session, I mean, Untold is a role-playing game. It's what it is. It's a role-playing game with a very, very thin structure on it.
So, I mean, we've talked about Untold on the show before. We had like a 20-minute interview during the PAX interviews with Michael Fox at Creativity Hub. We had Rory on when Untold was going through the Kickstarter. You know, we talk a lot about the stuff that Creativity Hub builds.
Yes.
Blank is one of them. We talk a lot about Rory Story Cubes.
Yes.
One of the things that I have seen this with Rory Story Cubes is it can be a little bit tough sometimes to build a story that's not a complete cop-out. Right? So you're like, oh, you know, this guy ran home and jumped over a bridge to grab a cat that had a bat in its mouth or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, oh, story's over. And what Untold does is it still uses those story cube mechanics to get people to develop to develop the story of the game, but it's adding the filler around. It's like, so this happens, and then this, or you know, you try to do this story that you told, this action that you told, you tried to do it, but it wasn't quite as successful as you thought, or maybe it totally failed or whatever. And it's kicking the can down the road for the players to pick up and actually carry.
Well, and it gives a little bit more structure of, you have to fill in some of the gaps with cubes. So like, something is attacking something. All right, roll your cubes, and you have to pick those two somethings out of the cubes that you've rolled.
And tell a story.
And then start your story.
And it's cool because the way Untold is designed, it is literally designed to be episodic. Think about it like
a TV show.
An episode of a TV show. That's exactly what it is. And so as we were beginning to wrap up our story, you know, we're kind of having this little meta conversation about, okay, so what's going to happen in the next show if we wrap everything up all prim and proper now? And then it got really interesting because then we started saying, well, what if we present the mystery for the next show like this? Or what if we present the mystery for the next show like that? And
it was good.
You know, it was a little awkward to get started because we didn't really know, like, we didn't have a good feeling of how the mechanics were going to play with the story that we were presenting.
Well, and we didn't really have a fully fleshed out setting yet.
Right.
And I feel like now we do.
Yeah, so. But as we kept going, and we've got some characters, pun intended, in our game
group. There are some characters already.
That is a really fun game,
yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to playing more of that with the same group or with another group, just because it's really nice to just feel like you have the opportunity to just let your creative juices flow, and it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
So, Untold Adventures await.
A few more games that we played.
So much
game. We tried out Spyfall.
Yeah, I like that game.
From a friend of ours.
Yep.
This is a game where, you know, you have a bunch of people, one person is the spy, and so most people are trying to figure out who the spy is. The spy, it's a game of hidden information, basically.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Spyfall's been out there for a while, so lots of people have heard about this game. Basically, there are 30 locations.
Something like that, yeah.
And, on any given turn, these cards are dealt out to all of the people who are playing. All of them have the same location on them, except for one, which says spy.
You are the spy.
Yep. And so each person is asking someone else a question about the location that they're in.
Yes.
Would you bring kids here? What's the color palette like? Are there customer? Whatever, blah, blah, blah,
blah. Is it loud? Yeah.
And, you know, whoever's answering the question, I mean, if you know where you are, it's probably pretty easy to answer these questions. But if you're the spy, you've got to fake it because you don't even know where they are.
Yeah, you've got no idea. So as the spy, your goal is to fake it well enough so nobody else knows you're the spy and figure out where you are.
Right.
Everybody else, your goal is figure out who the spy is. So anybody can stop the game at any point. And, you know, I accuse you as the spy, or the spy can reveal themselves and say, I'm the spy and I know where we are.
Right. And so there's an 8-minute timer running down to figure these things out. So it's turn-based, but it's not...
It's very loosely turn-based.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, really fun, kind of interesting game.
Yeah. It was... Once we got the hang of the mechanic, we had so much fun. I think we played 4 or 5 rounds in very quick succession.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time. We have more games that we played. We
so
played Dicey Peaks.
We did from Calliope Games. Calliope, by the way, every Calliope game that we played last week has been awesome.
Calliope has been a big winner this week. Dicey Peaks, we talked about a bunch on our PAX Unplugged shows.
It's a
pressure luck game where you're climbing a mountain. We'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, there will be a review for that coming.
Oh, yes. Definitely fun. Definitely kid appropriate. Very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
We played...
Bring Your Own Book.
Yay!
This is a game we've talked about before. This is basically apples to apples, but the answers, instead of the answers being on red cards, the answers are lines from a book.
Yes.
That you have brought with
that
you.
That you have brought with you, or at least that someone has brought with them.
And pro tip, Terry Pratchett is basically the best for this.
Douglas Adams, also quite good. They have so much ludicrousness. And as we've discussed playing the game, both Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams tend to have a good combination of descriptive stuff in the book and dialogue. Because you really need both to be able to answer all of the challenges.
Yeah, just because the variety of things that you need to answer.
So the reason we pulled this out is because Claire, our 9-year-old who loves to read... has been asking for a while, how is this, you know, what's this game? How do we play it? And can I play it sometime, please?
And that's awesome.
We can't really do it within the family because it's a party game. Three people is possible, but you really want a bigger group than that.
Right.
And within our immediate family, we could only do it with three people. Our 6, almost 7-year-old is not a strong enough reader yet. Right. To not make quite. This work.
He's getting there.
He'll get there in another year or two.
Yep.
So we had a good time with that, and the other folks in our gaming group complained in good-natured fun about the book that she chose, which was some YA piece of trash.
It was like one of these Disney like dress-up, pretty dress-up things, yeah. Or something like that. I don't know.
That's fine.
So, let's see, what else?
We played more Viral.
We did play more Viral. I am a fan of that game.
Yeah. You know who else is a fan of that game?
Asher. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Also,
there will be a review for that.
Eventually. Eventually.
Yep.
Let's look at our list here. Speaking of Calliope games, we mentioned earlier, one of the games we rung in the new year with was Ancestry.
Yeah. This game rocks.
Oh, man. You didn't believe me what I told you before. I was like, it was really fun. And you're like, okay, so you build a family tree. I take your word for it, yeah. That it sounds fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now that you've played it,
yeah, it's really
you
good.
Understand.
So, I mean, this is a game where you're doing exactly that. You're building a family tree. And this is a tile drafting game, similar to the yes. way you draft cards in Sushi Go.
Mm-hmm.
But as you draft your tiles, you're playing them into your family tree. And there's three things that you're trying to do in your family tree. So there's five clans.
Yes.
I guess you'd call them clans. Is that a... sufficient word.
Yeah, sure.
For them. And you're trying to build out your ancestral heritage.
You're trying to build a dynasty.
Yeah, a dynasty.
In each clan. That,
yeah. And you do this by having generational transition.
That are linked
together within that clan. So the clans are represented by colors on the cards
yeah.
and little icons.
And icons.
Like camels and elephants and stuff like that. But you also are trying to get money. So some of the cards have coins on them. And finally, you get points by having people that are married.
Yes.
So there's half hearts on the sides of some of the tiles. And yeah. So the generation score three times. Because yep. there's three rounds.
The generations you score based on whether or not you beat your immediate neighbors on your left and right.
Right, right. Yeah, I was getting to that, but...
Well, it's an important distinction because you're not just trying to have the best. You just need to have better than your neighbors.
Sure.
The coins, you gain those coins every turn. And the coins, they're really just straight up points. But you gain coins every turn. Or, mm-hmm. Every round, at the end of the round. And the marriages you only score at the end of the game.
Right, but they've got a scoring frequency that's kind of like Ticket to Ride or something
like that,
where the more you have, yeah. it's, you know.
The more you have, the more they're worth.
Right, and so the thing that makes the game so good is that it plays fast. It is a fast game. You can, it says 20 minutes on the box, and you can play that game in 20 minutes.
Totally true, you can play it. It's not a speed game.
Right.
But it's a fast game. You definitely could play through a whole game in 20 minutes, even with 5 or 6 people playing.
Yep. I mean, and the cool thing about it is that, I mean, there's a lot of strategy in it.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely played games where we just flat out said, we're just going to try something new this game, see what happens.
Because it's a 20-minute game, we played it over and over again. Like, what if I do this instead this time?
Yeah.
Like, let's play again, because I want to try a different strategy.
Right. And it's just, and it's really cool because, you know, the marriage stuff doesn't have an effect until the end of the game. So do you really want to play that earlier? Because the coins, right. you earn them every round. And so the earlier you play the coins, the more you're going to get out of them. But at the same time, all the dynasty stuff, you're battling your neighbors every round at the
every
same time.
Round.
So
yep.
you've got to really balance this stuff out and figure out how you're going to put things mm-hmm. together. The art is kind of, it's definitely intended to be humorous.
Yes.
It's got kind of that guillotine-esque art style to it.
A little bit, yeah.
I think it's probably a little more gritty than that, but
a little bit, yeah.
But
well, they're also trying to portray five different areas
cultures,
of the world,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
areas of the world. But that game is great. I really I
highly recommend it.
I didn't expect to dislike it, but I did not expect to like it as much as I do.
Yes, exactly.
So that is Ancestry from Calliope Games.
Our ringing endorsement is we started playing, and then all of a sudden we looked up, and it was 3:30 in the morning.
It was 3 hours later.
We're like, okay, we should go to bed.
Let's see. We also at one point split up and played different games with other people.
We did.
You played some classic Recco.
Well, it's funny that you say that. Like, it was classic Recco, except apparently the 2006 edition of Recco, they added in special powers on the prime numbers.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the prime numbers are colored differently than the other numbers. And any one of them, if you take it out of your rack and discard it, it has a special power on it that you get to use, which is like swap two cards in your rack or draw an extra card or something like that. Mm-hmm. Which just, it changed up the strategy just enough to make it a little bit more interesting.
Okay.
I like Recco, but it's kind of that comfort food, like you play it too much and you'll get sick of it.
Yeah. It was never my game.
That's fine. So. You didn't grow up playing it like I did.
Right. I grew up playing Mealborn. So.
Exactly.
So we bought it and we played it once and it's just sitting on the shelf. Well, while you were playing that, I was playing Baseball Highlights 2045.
Mm-hmm.
I love that game. We played it with the latest expansion that just came out, and it was awesome.
We're almost done with our giant list. The kids played Mousetrap with their friends.
And it actually worked. Like, I sat down and watched them turn the crank. They let Ellie turn the crank.
It was very nice of them. They went and got him so he could do it. Yeah.
And worked.
It all worked the way it was supposed to. All right.
I was impressed.
We played Carcassonne with a couple of different expansions. I don't know what they all were.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't dislike it as much as I remembered disliking it, which I suppose is good, but it's still not. The game didn't really do anything for me.
It's definitely one of those where it depends a little bit on the people. I like playing it with this group of friends, but yeah, a lot of other people I wouldn't like playing it with.
Okay, maybe that's it.
And I actually like playing Carcassonne, so. Sure.
Yeah, well, I was happy to facilitate someone getting their fix, so I didn't.
Yeah. We got two more.
We played Evolution: The Beginning from North Star Games. Is something we picked up at PAX Unplugged as well. So this is kind of the, I don't want to say dumbed down version, but the simplified version of Evolution, which is a lot more complicated. Yeah. But this was not bad. I mean, I think that it was the right game to play at 1 o'clock in the morning.
We rang in the new year with The Beginning.
The beginning of 2018 was The Beginning.
Yeah.
So,
our friend joked that it should be called Intelligent Design, the game.
Yep.
And I can totally see that.
Right. Yeah, I think this is definitely a game that is, I mean, it says 8+ on the box and it's right. That's the right age range for this game.
I think our almost 7-year-old Asher could handle it, but it would be very challenging.
No, he was fine.
I played it with him
at PAX. Yeah, he was fine with it. I mean, come on, this kid plays Chimera Station.
Fair enough.
So I mean,
I think his strategy would be a little lacking.
Yeah, are there strategic misses there?
Yeah, sure.
I think he'd be fine.
You every turn you have at least one species in front of you. Nondescript.
Well, you get
amorphous species.
You get a new species every turn. Everything has to be fed, and if you're a carnivore, you eat other species.
Right. Well, basically, every turn, you have at least one species in front of you, usually more than one. You can have multiple animals in a species, and you can give them traits to help them survive better.
Yep.
Whether that's make them better hunters, or give them more defense, or whatever.
Yep.
And I like the simplicity of it that, other than carnivore, and I think the defensive horns, all of the traits can really end up being used offensively or defensively, which is pretty cool.
Well, I mean, there's a couple weird ones, like long neck.
Yeah, there's a couple other weird ones, but
cow belly or whatever, that fat.
Fat.
Whatever.
Fat something. Yeah. Fat stores.
Fat tissue. That's what it is. But yeah, I mean, you know what? It's a simple game. It is designed to appeal to a demographic that isn't going to be able to hack the strategy of full-blown Evolution, and I think they did a good job with it.
Kind of wet the palate for somebody who isn't sure about full-blown.
Yeah. Oh, Evolution. They do this evil thing where they give you a pack of cards from the full game. And
in the box.
Like, oh, would you like something better, or would you like something to go deeper? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was
awesome. And lastly, we played Ticket to Ride Netherlands.
Yeah, this I guess this is a new map that came out fairly recently. We played it this morning. I mean, it was very frustrating.
Oh, man.
But I really liked it.
Yeah, there were a lot of things to like about it over traditional Ticket to Ride.
Right. So with Ticket to Ride Netherlands, what's going on is a lot more of the routes are double routes.
Yes.
And you're given a certain amount of money at the beginning of the game. Yeah. And so every time you play a route, if nobody else has played on the other route, you pay a certain amount of money. It's on the board to the bank.
Well, you always pay a cost.
Right. You're always paying a cost. And if there's nobody that's done the other route that's there, or if it's a single route, you pay it to the bank.
Right.
Otherwise, you pay it to the other player.
The player who built that route first.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's no bonus for completing the most routes, and there's no bonus for the longest train.
The only bonus is for having the most coins.
And they're huge. Yeah. Like, the person with the most coins gets a 55-point bonus at the end of the game, which is nutso.
Yeah. You know what else is nutso? I got that bonus, and I still didn't win the game.
How did you not win?
I ended up being just a couple points behind.
Oh, right. You were like 2 points behind. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because the person who we thought like was in the lead the entire game just kind of petered out at the very end. And ended up in last place. And I somehow got third place. But I really liked it.
The other thing to be noted is that the map is a little bit smaller and more compact than Ticket to Ride USA.
Right.
And there are very, very few gray routes. They're pretty much all colored. So that makes it a lot tighter to try to get to the spots that you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple other things. Like, if you can't afford to pay for a route, you can take a card that doesn't, blah, blah, blah. But none of that matters.
We should mention, it's not only the person who has the most coins who gets a bonus.
Everybody gets a bonus depending on where you are in the.
Basically, everybody except the person with the least coins.
Me.
Gets a bonus. But the bonuses are really large.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I actually killed it in route score.
You did.
And just in completed routes, I had 152 points.
Yeah.
And it still wasn't enough.
Nope. Well, because I had a little over 100 points in completed routes. And I got the 55 bonus on the coins.
Just killer.
So forget it.
I suspect we've probably forgotten games that we've played as well.
Because I'm sure
we've played so many games.
The kids have been pulling out games and playing them. It's been good. Oh, they brought Family Flux.
Oh yeah, we played Family Flux
when we went to a friend's house.
You know, it's Flux
along with Blank and Crosstalk at that particular friend's house.
It's Flux.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, Family Flux is nice. They keep the difficulty level tamped down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there are cards in there specific to it being in families.
Yep.
So grandparent bonus, child bonus.
The parent bonus stuff like is that. You may draw another card if you're a parent. The child bonus is you may play another card if you're a child.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
All kinds of stuff like that.
So that's it. No big deal. Those are the games that we've
just
been playing.
Just a few games in the
last 5 days.
We're going
to take a break because
days.
I think we're exhausted coming up with that list. And when we come back, we have some special guests, and then we're going to talk about our favorite games from 2017. Hey, everybody, we're back. And we're going to get into the kinds of games that we really liked in 2017. Some of our favorites, right? So not necessarily the best game of 2017,
right.
but our favorites. And before we really got into all the different kinds of games that we liked, we thought we would do something a little bit special.
We have special guests.
Hello, special guests. Can you say hello?
Hi.
Who are you?
Asher.
And I'm Claire.
All right. Well, we've talked about Asher and Claire on the show before.
Many times.
They are two of the three little gamers that make up the Family Gamers.
They help us do a lot of our playtesting.
Mm-hmm. And we wanted to have them on the show because they have favorite games from 2017, too.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to them about this already, and so I happen to know that there's a little bit of a theme with their favorite games.
A little bit.
Who would like to go first? Asher. Asher goes first. Asher, what was your favorite game last year?
Actually, I have two favorite games.
Oh, way to mix it up.
I have one which is Mousetrap, and another one which is Untold.
So Untold is a great game.
Yeah, so Mousetrap, the classic, which you just played yesterday.
On New Year's Eve.
On New Year's Eve. Yes. And also Untold. So Mousetrap's been around for a long time. So Untold, we've talked about on the show. Tell us what your favorite thing is about Untold. Tell us what you do in the game, what you like about it.
So you're like heroes and you're saving the world from like a enemy guy that basically decided to make a bunch of stuff evil and just rule the world, basically.
Okay, so how do you know about the enemy guy? What tells you about the enemy guy?
It's sort of like a story cube, so you have dice and you roll them and they have pictures on them.
Okay, and then you kind of work together to make the story?
Yeah.
Is it fun to make up the story as you go along?
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Anything else you want to add about Untold?
Not really.
All right, cool. All right. But it is your favorite game from last year?
Yes, one.
Awesome. Well, okay. One of your favorite games from last year, yes. Okay, all right. And Claire, you have a favorite game also.
My favorite game is Blank.
Blank. We talked about Blank.
We have definitely talked about Blank and how we love to play it over and over and over.
Yes. So, Claire, honestly, I think it's probably the driver of why we play Blank so much.
Yes, definitely.
So, talk a little bit about Blank. We just put a review on the site, but for people who maybe don't read our reviews and only
Shame
listen to
on
our
you.
Podcast, talk about the game. How do you play the game and what do you like about it so much?
So, there's three rule cards out. And you get a hand of 7 cards. It's kind of like Uno, except you can play multiple cards at once.
Okay. Do those multiple cards have to have something in common?
They all have to be the same color or the same number.
Okay.
Okay, so that's kind of like Uno. So what else makes the game special?
Besides playing multiple cards.
There's 3 rule cards.
Okay. What are the rule cards like?
Like, so they you don't change them unless there's a card that does it. So they set out, and if the top card that you play is a card that follows up to one of those rules, you have to do what the rule card says. And if you don't, you draw a card.
So, like, if the card played is a 1, everybody has to put their hand on the draw pile. And the last person to do that has to draw a card.
Yes.
That's one of the rule cards, yeah.
And then what's your favorite rule card?
Probably that one.
Where everybody puts their hand on the draw pile?
I think you like the one that you always use to make mommy talk slow.
But that's not a rule card.
I'm sorry, that is an effect card.
That
you
is
are
a game
correct.
Effect
I
card.
I am wrong. Okay, so just like Uno, everybody's trying to get rid of their cards. What happens if somebody gets rid of their cards?
They win.
And unlike other games, something happens after you win in this game.
So there's blank cards that don't have anything on them, and...
Well, they have numbers and colors, but they don't have, like, special rules or anything.
And if you win, you can make your own card.
You can make a game effect card, or a rule card. I think my favorite card that you have made was one that you called Running 4 Miles, and you can discard up to four cards as long as they're all different colors.
So that is Blank. Both of those games are from the Creativity Hub.
Yeah, a little bit of a theme going on there. Are there any other games you would like to mention from this year that you thought were really good?
Yes, we played it a few times, and I still like Batman Flux.
Also a good game, yeah. It hasn't got nearly as much play in the house as it should, because we have too many other games we have to play.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys very much for coming on the show for a little bit and talking to us about what some of your favorite games are. Is there anything else that either one of you would like to say before you go?
Happy New Year. Even though it's past New Year's.
You say it with a little more excitement.
Happy New Year!
All right, we're going to let them go, and then we're going to get into our favorite games of 2017.
You guys are nuts.
You know what's really funny with kids? Asher saying that Mousetrap was his favorite game of the year, basically because he played it yesterday.
Because he played it.
But he has been huge on Untold for a couple months.
Yes.
So.
And he did mention to me separately after recording that he has really enjoyed Viral and he really enjoyed Chimera Station. And those would be in his top five as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, I don't think that ours are in a particular order necessarily. What I know that we both did was we both tried to get a little bit of variety in there, right? So,
yeah.
Like, I have a game that's definitely more for kids.
Yes, as do I.
You know, and more co-op or whatever, stuff like that. One of my games is a little off the expected sheet.
All right.
And I will explain why when we get there. Like I said, they're not in order. They're just kind of a list of five games that we each liked.
Yeah.
What's first on your list?
First on my list, an awesome family game for all ages, is Downforce.
Yeah, that is a good game from Restoration Games.
I was really surprised because the first time I saw other people playing it, I was just like, ah, car racing game, whatever. I'm going to go play this other thing over here. And then I read Corey's review of it, and then I played it. And oh my goodness, it was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun, even though I lost so badly.
I seem to do a really bad job drafting cars and a really good job betting on who's going to win.
Sure.
That's my MO for Downforce.
Yeah.
So. That is a great game. It's super approachable.
Yes.
I mean, even if you've got a player in there who doesn't really understand some of the strategy, like it doesn't really drag down the other players and they're still having fun when they're doing it. So it is a very, very good game for adults to play with kids involved.
Yeah.
So that makes it a good family game.
Yeah. What's the first one on your list?
The first one on my list is also on your list, so I'm going to wait on that
one. All right.
It doesn't matter. The order is not important, but I'm going to say Magic Maze. Magic Maze is just, it's a really, really, really good game. It was nominated for the SDJ, but didn't win, possibly because it wasn't really known in the States at the time. But it did get localized, and now we play it, and it's just super lots of fun. It's a completely different mechanic. This whole simultaneous, everybody's moving every piece all of the time without the ability to really communicate significantly. All of the art is this very cartoony kind of lackadaisical.
Oh my goodness.
There are so many Easter eggs.
You have no time to appreciate the craziness of the art.
Yeah.
But I love it.
And I just think I like the way they build up the scenarios, even though the game is all tiling. It's always kind of this sort of programmatically generated. So it's really infinite. We've played scenario one so many times because we introduced this game to so many people.
But
the scenarios add a little bit more complexity as you go on.
And they provide a lot of ways to freshen it up and make it be like, okay, we've done the same thing a bunch of times. Well, let's add a different thing
spin on it, slight adjustment. Yeah. So that's the first game that's on my list is Magic Maze from Dude Games.
All right. I'll pick another one from my list. I'm going to go with the best game for families with young kids, hands down, is Silly Street.
Okay. For like little kids.
Yeah. I mean, like, preschool, kindergarten, first grade, kids who really want to do what the grown-ups are doing. They don't want to just get shuffled off and be like, well, you can't play games because you're too little.
Right. I almost think Silly Street is pre-K kindergarten. I think first grade,
there's a lot more stuff
available.
Yeah.
I would say, Silly Street is a game that you can play with a four-year-old.
Yes. But the reason I say that is because it's about your family getting together and having fun.
Right.
Which is what games should be about, right?
Right.
And it's just, it's so inclusive of all age levels, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a complex game. It's not going to be challenging to anyone, but it's still fun.
Right. Yeah. And as long as, you know, the people playing it are okay with goofing around, they're going to have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So, Silly Street is a good thought. So, sort of along those lines, a game that sort of tilts a little bit younger is a co-op game that you know how sometimes you get a book or a game or whatever, and it just, for some reason with you, it just hits every note?
Mm-hmm.
That game for me was Perlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah. I could tell.
I just, I just love the art. I love the theme. I love the cooperative deduction. I love the opportunity that we had to teach deduction through the cooperative play. Mm-hmm. I just really loved everything about that game. I mean, it was like, I liked Hanabi, but this theme crushes it and the art wrecks it.
The theme's a lot better than Hanabi. I am definitely not as much of a fan of Sherlock Holmes as you are. I'm one of those like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's why there's two of us.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. Everything about it, I just liked. You know what I mean? To the point where I probably gloss over its faults. And I acknowledge that.
That's
fine. But I really had a lot of fun with it. And I like games that have as a fundamental component the ability to teach deductive reasoning or logical progression to the people I'm playing with.
All right. Moving upwards a little bit in difficulty and age range. Man, I love King Domino.
King Domino's a good game.
King Domino is great.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's simple enough for a non-reader to play.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they've got basic ideas of gameplay down.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everything about the way it's laid out is incredibly logical.
Yeah.
The way not movement, but the way the tile selection is done, it all makes sense. There's no questions about how you're supposed to figure this stuff out. It's just, okay, here's these two or three fundamental rules on how you play the game, and that's really all you have to explain.
And although it can get frustrating, it's not really direct head-to-head competition most of the time, so it keeps it from being like, ooh, I'm going to get you.
Well, there's a little bit of that when people take the tiles that you want.
Right. Well, I said there's a little bit, but it's not one of the games that's like that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a take that game. Yeah. So that's nice. It is yeah, definitely older than Silly Street, but still very approachable by, you know, primary school
age
kid. So that's a good choice. On the complete flip side, I will interject my odd one here, and that is Through the Ages, the digital version. And I say this, okay,
of course it is.
Look, what do you want from me? Okay, so the iOS/Android version of Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization, came out this past year. So yes, the game has been out. The game's not new, but this kind of instance is. And the reason why I put it on my list is sort of twofold. Number one, I mean, the game is perfectly tailored for asynchronous gameplay, so it's really great in that format.
Sure.
A lot like Twilight Struggle or even Seasoned, which we actually discovered in reverse.
Yep.
It removes all of the fiddly bits from the game. It manages
takes care
all
of it
that
all
stuff.
For yeah, you.
The,
yeah.
It, none of that stuff happened, you know, happens. And in fact, we started to play Seasons digitally and then got the game, and we played it, and we're like, there's too much crap going on. Yeah. I don't want
to
play
I will
this
stick
anymore.
To playing it online.
Yeah, and that actually warned me off of going and getting Through the Ages physically, because I was playing it on a website before.
Yep.
And so that's a huge part of why I like it. I mean, we've got other podcasters that I like to play games with online. This allows me the opportunity to do it. But the thing that actually sets it apart beyond just sort of the digital implementation of an existing board game, is they put a whole challenge system in with AIs that that have these kind of special challenges involved. And I'm terrible at them, but there's no question that I'm a better gamer because I have these challenges that I can try to
push
play
yourself
against and iterate and try to figure out strategy and do all these things without, you know, all of my friends that are better at me at this game kind of suffering through this idiot trying to play Through the Ages. So, I know the game's been out, but the digital version is absolute. I mean, when our kids see it on my phone, they're like, oh, you're playing that again.
Oh, you're playing the game again.
I mean, if you're going to talk about, you know, best bang for the buck, it was a $10 game, and I've put quite a few hours into it.
Yes.
So,
yes, you have.
So I put Through the Ages, the digital implementation on my list.
Well, that means it's my turn to name a game where you're going to be like, okay, sure, whatever. Number 9. I really, really enjoy playing Number 9, and I totally get that it's not your thing, because I'm an abstract strategy freak anyway.
Right. When there's an abstract strategy game, by the way, that we both like, it's like, that game is like worth its weight in gold.
You mean like Sagrada?
Like Sagrada? Like Sakatsu?
I haven't played enough Sagrada for it to be on my list of things I love this year.
Yeah. We need to play that more, though.
We need to play it more.
We do.
But Number 9, I can assuredly say, once again, I really love it. It's a great abstract game, and it plays exactly the same with solo play as it does with four players, because there is no interaction whatsoever, which isn't always good, but in this case, I like it. It's mm-hmm. You're doing your own little individual puzzle. Just everybody's doing them at the same time.
Sure.
It is, again, pretty approachable. If as long as a kid has sort of the idea of multiplication, not even necessarily the actual numbers, but the idea of what multiplication means,
sure.
And can have a light enough touch to stack the numbers on each other.
Right.
That's the biggest downfall with that game, is it's really easy to shift stuff and mess it up.
You got to be really careful about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel the way you do about Sherlock Holmes about Number 9. Like it's fine. I like to play it when you want to play it. I'm sure, whatever. But it's just.
I really love it.
Yep. That's fine. That's perfectly fair. Okay, so let's see. For me,
is the last one the one that both of us agreed on?
Yes, but I have another one first.
Oh, you have another one.
Yes,
okay.
I do. So my fourth game on my list is Viral.
Okay.
You know, I don't know that it like just hits me right in the theme love feels that Sherlock Holmes does,
mm-hmm.
but I think the theme is awesome. I love the art.
I like the way it all fits together. It's good.
Yeah, there's a certain elegance to like really understanding how the mechanics work. I mean, there's still certain things like the magnetism, which I haven't really nailed exactly how to use that strategically. But it's just a fun game to teach.
Yeah.
It's area control that's not too complicated.
Yes.
And I like that also.
It's definitely on the complex side of what I like to play.
Yeah. You know, I one thing that might probably work in its favor is that we don't own a lot of area control games. It's not really a mechanic that we seek out a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of refreshing in that way because we're not, you know, it's not like, oh, another area control game. But I just, you know, everything about my experience of playing Viral, from the fact that Asher sat down and was just like, I grok this game, let's play it right now.
Yeah.
All the way to things like enjoying the art style and the mechanics and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it didn't hurt that Tony was a super cool dude. You know, I mean,
sure.
I say that, you know, tongue in cheek, but I just really like that game. And it's just like a fresh game. You know, it's unlike some other games that I love, like Sherlock Holmes or like Crosstalk, like the colors are not muddled. Like they're very distinct and sharp,
very bright,
and it's a bright game, and that's not really the case with a lot of other games. Like even I don't know, baseball highlights. You know, it's green.
You tend to like that kind of vintage look a lot of the time.
Yeah, but this is nothing like that,
and this one is not like
that. And I love it.
Yeah.
So Viral. I like that game a lot. If you're into area control, it is. It's on the Dice Tower Essentials line for a reason, I think.
Yeah. Our last one, so the last one is the one that you and I both share.
Yep.
With good reason. It's Baron Park.
It is Baron Park.
Baron Park? Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not even going to try. You know, I mean, I think the only shame to Baron Park, and I'm going to be 100% honest when I say this, is that I think it almost renders patchwork obsolete.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, you just play two-player Baron Park.
Well, the one thing I'll say is Patchwork has a little bit more of a drafting mechanic than Baron Park does. A little bit.
I guess. There's everything about Baron Park I enjoy more than Patchwork. And the only reason why that's a shame is because Patchwork is a great game.
Patchwork is a great game.
You know, I mean, I think there's certainly examples where there's two games that are virtually identical and one of them is themed differently, and so that might appeal to a certain audience. And so I understand that. But I really like Baron Park. It's got a lot of those Easter egg things that we kind of talked about with Magic
Cute
Maze,
bears.
Which I really, really like. It has a lot like, I guess, King Domino, where you're pulling these tiles and it's independent, but it can affect other people a little bit.
Independent, but connected.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just there's... It might be the engineer in us that really likes to complete these nice square rectangular tiles.
I love anything with the Tetris-y kind of pieces and making it all fit together.
Drop that last L-shaped piece in and boom, great. You have a perfectly completed rectangle. And
then you get to put your little bear statue in.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
I like the koalas there, even though they're not bears.
And I will point out this is yet another one fits well into the Family Gamer's mission,
mm-hmm.
that it's pretty easy to adjust the difficulty up or down a bit. You can adjust the difficulty down by taking out all of the special achievement things and just, we're building our parks with the pieces that are here. Go.
Yep.
But you can add the achievements for keeping things more interesting for more experienced players.
Mm-hmm. I had some new ideas about how to adjust achievement stuff
for
kids, too. So if an adult completes one of the spare achievements, mm-hmm. it comes off the stack, but it doesn't get added to the adult score.
Oh. Well, right. Then.
So kids are still incentivized to get the achievements.
To try to get some.
And so are the adults, because they prevent the kids from getting as many points.
Right.
So,
sure.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of options. You know, these things kind of pop up.
Yeah.
Whenever you're trying to figure out how to make these things more approachable. So that's our list. Talked about a lot of games today.
So many games.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Between you and me and the kids, I think we have a top 10.
Yeah, pretty much. And in no particular order.
In no particular order.
10 or so top games top 10 favorite games of 2017. Yeah, top 10 or so favorite games of 2017.
Yeah.
There we go. That's a show title. All right. Well, that is our top 10 or so of 2017. Mm-hmm. We went to our community and we asked them what their favorite games 2017 were.
Yeah.
And so we got a lot of responses. We got a lot of great responses on this.
And very few of them overlap with ours. So that's great.
So Ryan Gutowski, he's the guy who runs One Board Family. He said that Photosynthesis would be up there in his top 5 along with Downforce.
Yay, Downforce. Kirsten, although I'm not going to say her whole name, she said her kid's favorite was Go Nuts for Donuts.
So our kids played Go Nuts for Donuts at Boston
only
Fig?
One of our kids played Go Nuts for Donuts at PAX Unplugged, and our other kid who did not get a chance to play it was quite put out. Definitely in the cards for 2018 for us.
PAX Unplugged, not
Boston Fig. Okay. They didn't have any open to play.
Jeff Jackson, who is actually the person who introduced us to the North Star Games folks,
mm-hmm.
He said that his favorite games were Chimera Station, which we've talked about.
Yep.
That's a Tasty Minstrel game, right?
From Tasty Minstrel Game, unlike any other Tasty Minstrel game. Yes. Yeah.
And Near and Far from Red Raven Games, which our friend Spencer and Laura really, really like.
They rave about, yes.
We haven't played a Red Raven game yet, but that is on the bucket list. Thing is to play
maybe
one,
for 2018
games.
Yeah. Maybe
I think probably Above and Below, that's the classic one, so
probably.
Yep.
Darren says escape games, and of all the escape games they've tried, the Exit series is their favorite.
I think we really probably should pick one of these things up. They are very highly recommended.
I think it would be a fun and different group game night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we would want to do it with just the two of us, having watched Spencer and Lara try to work through one with just two people. You need more minds than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Michael Epstein says Pigment, which I actually don't know anything about Pigment. Do you know anything about Pigment?
I have heard of it, but that's about it.
Well, it looks like from his comment that might be a game that he has worked on. So yeah. We'll have to find out. So Mike Epstein, if you are listening, let us know where we should go to check out Pigment. But he also recommended Codenames, which is a fantastic game.
Specifically Codenames Duet.
Yep, for two people. And, you know, of course, we play Disney Codenames this year.
Yay, Disney Codenames.
So Codenames is still alive and kicking.
Yes. It missed being in our top 10 only by a little bit. Our friend Bridget says Sleeping Queens and Ghost Fightin' Treasure Hunters.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't get a chance to play Ghost Fightin' Treasure Hunters around Halloween. I tried to get our hands on it.
Yeah.
It just didn't really work out.
It just didn't happen.
But Sleeping Queens, the game right game, which that is like an evergreen
oldie
title
but
for
a goodie
them.
At
yeah.
this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And then superfan Nick Martinelli posted about 700 games on the list. No, not really.
But a bunch.
Some of which We have already mentioned Go Nuts for Donuts, for example.
Dream you mentioned Home.
Dream Home and Karuba, and then Brew Dice from
Brew Dice,
our friend Andy
big
Jeremiah.
Fan of Brew Dice.
Sparkle Kitty from
which I've heard lots
Breaking
of good things
Games.
About.
Yep.
We've never gotten to play it.
Yep, Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters again. Santorini.
Also a good game.
Which is a great game. Herbaceous, which is from Dr. Finn.
Yes.
And Robot Lab. He also
which
mentions
I know nothing about.
A second set of games, because why stop at one?
His personal favorites.
His personal favorite, right. So the first list was the family favorites, and his personal favorites, Above and Below, that's up there with
that's
the
Red Raven,
yep. That's Red Raven. All versions of Clank. Cottage Garden. Is Cottage Garden, Dr. Finn, also...
I'm not sure.
I think so.
But it might be, yeah.
Fields of Green, Best Treehouse Ever.
That's a good one.
King Domino.
Of course.
And Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle.
Which I've heard lots of good things about.
We technically own a copy of Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. It's just in Minnesota right now.
Yes.
Or Wisconsin. It's in Wisconsin.
And we'll get around... We will probably at least break it open and try it out in 2018.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Probably with our... 9-year-old who's started you've started reading Harry Potter with?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. That's gonna be awesome. So thank you so much for your back talk. We really appreciate it. We love hearing from the community and talking to you guys about the stuff that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, if you have any questions for us or you'd like to get a hold of us, there's lots of great ways to do it. The easiest way is to just go to our Facebook page, which is
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
Yep, and that is where we post a lot of our questions, just like this one, where we said basically we are going to be talking about our best games of 2017, so tell us what you like. You can also go to our community, which you can reach at
thefamilygamers.com/community.
Yep, and that is anchored on Facebook as well.
That's a Facebook group.
As always, you can go to thefamilygamers.com to check out our reviews and our podcasts, everything like that. You can find us on Twitter.
At FamilyGamersAA.
Instagram.
At FamilyGamersAA.
Please go to your podcast provider
of
choice and subscribe to the show. Leave us a review. Share us with your friends. And
tell the world. Yay!
Yes, tell the world. And you can always email us if you want to contact us more privately. Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Claire@thefamilygamers.com. Asher@thefamilygamers.com.
Yep. Yeah, we can be reachable at basically anything at thefamilygamers.com.
Insert name here.
Right.
At the Family Gamers.
We're super looking forward to an awesome year.
We have so many games for 2018, and I'm excited about pretty much all of them. So, get playing.
We're going to have to.
Yeah.
So, that's going to be it for us this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and until next week,
play games with your kids.